If you think we're on the run.
Hello one and all, and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army Podcast. This is episode number 35, and we've got an absolute jam-packed episode for you this month. I'm really quite looking forward to listening to it myself, actually, once I've managed to edit it all. This time around, we've got Frank Williams back on the show. On this occasion, he's going to be reviewing The Recruit with me. That's probably the most vicar-centric episode of Dad's Army of all nine series. And I have to say, it was an absolute pleasure to record the discussion with Frank once again. Even when his memories aren't particularly clear about what happened given a particular episode, he's still so entertaining and so committed to everything Dad's Army stands for today. He's a real gent, and as you probably gathered, I really enjoy spending time with Frank. Oliver Crocker joined us as well. It's a three-way review this time around. Now, Oliver, I interviewed two or three episodes ago. I think it was episode 32 of the Dad's Army podcast. And Oliver is a television producer by profession, and he put together an absolutely superb documentary about Frank's life and career called Dad's Army and Beyond, The Frank Williams Story. It was really good to speak to Oliver a couple of episodes back, and he enjoyed it so much that he agreed to come back and take part in this podcast, so you may be hearing more from Oliver in the future, you never know. We go through all of the latest Dad's Army news, and despite what I say in the first news segment, we have actually got a reasonable amount of news this time round, and we go through a couple of really good pieces of feedback we've received. In addition to that, you'll also hear the speeches that were made at the Dad's Army Appreciation Society's Members' Meal back in May this year. And that was a huge event for the Appreciation Society. There were well over 100 members attending, and there were loads of stars, surviving cast and crew, and they all make after-dinner speeches. It's a bit like a wedding, almost. You have your dinner, and then a series of people get up and make entertaining speeches. This time around, it's purely just focused around Dad's Army, so I really hope you enjoy listening to those speeches.
This is Frank Williams, and you're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast.
Here is the news, and this is John Snagg reading it.
Now, we don't have a terrific amount of Dad's Army news for you this time around. However, there is one piece of news that I would like to bring to your attention and discuss. Now, first of all, let's go back a couple of years. Now, do you remember seeing Dad's Army on the news all the time, partially because of the 40th anniversary celebrations, but also because there was a private theatre company called Caliber Productions decided to bring Dad's Army back into the public eye by touring four adapted episodes of Dad's Army all around the United Kingdom. Now, they were very traditional episodes, if you like. There was The Deadly Attachment, which is probably the most famous Dad's Army episode ever, along with two of the three lost episodes. That was The Stripe for Fraser and The Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker. And in some locations, they toured Room at the Bottom as well. Well, it was announced a couple of months ago that Caliber are going to do another tour of Dad's Army, this time with four brand new episodes. Caliber announced the second tour, called Dad's Army Marches On, some time ago, but they've kept the names of those episodes under wraps, and I'm pleased to say that I can exclusively reveal now, through having a recent conversation with Ed O'Driscoll, who is the managing director of Caliber, which episodes are going to be on show this time around. Well, first of all, there's the slightly melancholic and much revered Mum's Army. There's also Branded, which sees Godfrey take centre stage. Keep Young and Beautiful, which is one of my favourite episodes, along with No Spring for Fraser. So that's going to be really exciting. There's a very good mix of episodes there, and if I were to compose a list of my favourite Dad's Army episodes, I would say all of those episodes would be in my top 10, possibly even top 6, I would say. Anyway, by all means, let me know what you think of the choice of episodes, and who knows where it's going to be touring. I'm sure it's going to be a number of dates again. The last tour was split into two legs and covered the length and breadth of the UK, really, even toured over to Northern Ireland, and the second leg actually kicked off at the Hackney Empire in the middle of London. So it really did do very well, and it became very prominent. And certainly the reviews of the production in lots of local newspapers and in the national media were generally very positive. The only real negative reviews came, strangely, from Dad's Army fans. I think it's great that they've decided to continue this kind of production. It keeps Dad's Army fresh, it introduces the humour to a new audience, and it brings generations of the family together. You'll get the grandparents go along to see it, and they'll take their grandchildren with them, and they've all got something to laugh about. And there's not really many television productions that theatre houses can do that with. I can't wait to go along and see yet another production of what I consider to be the finest television programme of all time. I mentioned the cast there briefly. Now, the casting clearly hasn't been confirmed yet. The only actor who has said yes for definite they'll take part is Leslie Grantham. And Leslie played Walker last time to great effect, so it'll be really good to see him reprise his role as well.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with your host, James.
Now, this is extra news. I recorded the news segment some time ago. A couple of days ago, it was announced that Ian Lavender has taken up a part in the Sister Act stage play that started at the London Palladium at the beginning of June. Now, it's a rather interesting role for Ian. It's not something that you would automatically assume he would take on, or suit, really. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs in that role. Everything I've seen Ian in, or whatever he turns his hand to, does seem to be pretty good. He's an absolutely incredibly diverse actor. And I am actually going to try and book a ticket to go and see him in Sister Act, which is odd, because I never would have thought that was something that I would have been interested in at all. And quite honestly, I'm not. It's just Ian's performance that I'm particularly keen on seeing. Now, booking for that show is open, I think, until February 2010. So you've got plenty of time to try and book a ticket. However, I'm not entirely certain how long Ian has been booked to star in the play, so it probably is worth checking before you choose what date to go and see the play that Ian is actually still in it. He's receiving third billing at the moment behind two other actresses who'd fill the main roles, one of whom is Sheila Hancock. So he's starring alongside a pretty big name there. Anyway, good luck, Ian, and I look forward to seeing you in Sister Act.
Oh, dear, I'm so sorry I'm late. The confirmation class went on and on and on. Have I missed anything?
No, it's perfect, old man. We're just going to start the parade now.
Oh, how very exciting.
You left your belt in the vestry, your reverence.
Oh, yes, silly me.
All right, well, now that you're both here, we can start. Now, come along. Good as you can.
Goody, goody. Private Yeatman, hat.
All right, come on, you stand at the end there and just watch what the others do and try and follow them, all right?
That was a clip from the final episode in Series 6, The Recruit. Now, joining me to discuss that episode, we have Frank Williams once again. Welcome back to the podcast, Frank.
Thank you.
You're becoming quite a regular.
Oh, well, that's good, good.
And also joining us on this occasion is Oliver Crocker. Now, you may remember Oliver. He is the producer of the documentary about Frank Williams and featured on the podcast a good few months ago, wasn't it now, Oliver?
I think it was. Episode 32, if I remember correctly. Uh-huh. Yes, it's a pleasure to see you again, Jim. And The Recruit, I'm currently working on the BBC Two show Something for the Weekend, which is on every Sunday. And on that, we do a classic déjà vu section where we get the viewers at home to guess the year of a classic BBC show. We show them three clips and a Top of the Pops clip. And it was my first episode, and I managed to persuade him to use Dad's Army, and I picked The Recruit. So Frank was back on the box again.
Well, that's good to know.
This was shown in December 1973. It attracted about 11.5 million viewers, which even in the 1970s was an extremely good figure.
Well, I think we normally got really good audience figures for Dad's Army by then, didn't we?
Absolutely. Okay, so looking at the episodes itself, then, we start off with a fairly atypical scene, really.
As a matter of fact, I have received some fruit from Mrs. Mannering.
Oh, really? Oh, how nice. Is this it?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, how nice. Yes, it says, get well soon.
Yeah, there's something on the back, too. Look.
Oh, is there? Oh, yeah, the Anderson shelter is leaking again.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait till I get home, I'm afraid.
We're in hospital with Mannering and his rather sore toes. Starting episodes like this always takes me aback a little, because they've established a format so clearly in terms of the opening parades. I think it shows the producers and the writers confidence that they can actually show a different aspect of the three main characters for the first 8 minutes of the opening of the episode.
Yes, well, the marvellous thing about that is, of course, because of the plot, you have to get rid of Mannering for a little while. So they then think of the idea, well, we'll have him in hospital. Obviously, it can't be anything terribly serious, so he has an ingrowing toenail, which actually is a sort of a bit of a joke in a way, and you get the opportunity for Wilson to do his... You do look absolutely wonderful in that uniform to the nurse. And
thank you so much for showing us the way.
Well, that's quite all right, sir.
I must say that that uniform really does suit you awfully well.
Oh, thank you, sir. I think
it's the belt, that little belt you're wearing. Yes, it makes your, waist look absolutely tiny.
That will be all, nurse. Thank you. They have work to do, you know, tending the sick. Don't understand about listening to all this Ronald Coleman stuff.
And Clive bringing the grapes, which turn out to be shaved gooseberries, and so it's wonderful, yes.
Yes, he strategically forgot to tell Mannering that until he'd already eaten one.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
And it is interesting what you say there, talking about having to sideline Mannering, because that happens very rarely. He's normally the focus of each episode.
Yes, but you see, once you've sidelined him, then you put Wilson in charge, who can make a total mess of it in Mannering's eyes. And that's always a good ploy, I think.
No.
And you couldn't sideline Mannering without showing him somewhere else. That's certainly something that couldn't happen. So it's very refreshing, I think. I mean, it is a very good episode of Recruit. It's not your normal kind of episode. I think it's fun that they muddled it around a bit. And Arthur is really, really funny when he's trying to distract Wilson from stepping on his toes. Will you mind my feet? I mean, those bits are hilarious.
Yeah.
It's a very good episode.
Yeah.
I think, considering the first scene again, the dynamic between the three main characters is slightly different there as well, possibly because they're out of uniform. They're not in a militaristic environment. But it's nice to see those little flashes of almost friendship between the three main characters.
Oh, yes, but I think that's their right through anyway. I mean, I think, they have their little spats with each other, but Mannering and Wilson really are really quite good friends. And of course, Corporal Jones is very respectful to Mannering, whatever situation he's in.
It's quite a clever little cut from the hospital scene directly into what appears to be a bit of a mess, where Wilson is trying to defend his decision to allow you to join their merry band.
But are you maintaining discipline?
Oh, yes, sir. I think I'm keeping the discipline very well. In my style.
Yeah. Well, I hope to goodness you are. There's only one way to run an army, you know, Wilson. We must have obedience. Instant, unthinking obedience.
No!
Please.
Just one at a time.
One at a time, as he says. I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson, but I really feel that you did the wrong thing.
Yes, well, I do wish you'd stop nagging at me all the time. I've got the most dreadful headache coming on.
Yes, well, we'll need some defending, wouldn't it, really?
Can you remember getting that script? And were you excited by the idea of...
I can't. I mean, it's all such a long time ago. I really can't remember. The thing I do remember about that, of course, is that it was the second episode, I think, in which Jimmy Beck had not appeared. He'd appeared in the one before, but only in the location filming. And he had, by then, gone into hospital. And so he had to be written out of this one. And they do a quite nice little way of explaining his absence, because, of course, at that point, we all thought that he would be coming back again. Sadly, he never did.
I think they did handle his absence particularly sensitively, and they got a good laugh out of his absence in the script.
Yes.
Where's Walker?
Oh, he asked me to leave a note in his place.
Pick it up, Wilson.
Right, sir. Captain Mannering, personal.
Oh. Personal?
Yes.
Give it to me.
Oh. Unusual perfume. Petrol.
Dear Cap, Thanks for letting me off. Had to go up to the spoke for a few days to do a deal. I think I can swing it for a grand, but I shall have to drop the geezer a pony. On the other hand, I may cop it for a bit under the odds, in which case I'll have to sweeten him with a monkey. Half a bar for his nippers. P.S. Here's a couple of onesers for yourself. How dare he try to bribe me? See him in the office as soon as he comes back.
No, sir. There's going to be quite a queue there.
But it still felt very much as if he was there, so much so that James Beck was credited at the end of the episode.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
And following this episode, Walker was never mentioned again.
Which I think is sad. You know, viewers will have obviously missed him. I mean, I think perhaps some sort of mention could have been nice. But then again, it's a delicate thing. I mean, I've read that Arthur found it very difficult doing that hospital scene, knowing that Jimmy was himself in hospital. Yeah. I do wonder whether, presumably, there's an original script somewhere that features Walker in the episode. I wonder whether that still exists.
I'm sure there was an original script. I don't remember it, but I mean, I'm sure there was. But by the time I got it, they'd already knew they had to do the rewrite and write about. But you're absolutely right about Arthur. I remember Arthur actually saying, so difficult, really, thinking that we start this episode in a hospital, because it keeps making you think of Jimmy.
Yeah. Your uniform, Frank, do you think had to have a fitting, as it were, or was this something that will have come from the back row, or, you know?
I've no idea again. I've just absolutely no idea. I'm sure it must have had a fitting. I mean, they knew my measurements quite well by then. So I think I must have had a fitting. And I think dear old Teddy must have had a fitting as well.
Mm. Was Teddy excited to be here? Because he gets some really good gags in this episode.
Teddy was Teddy, and I mean, you know, whatever. I think most actors, the script comes along, and that's what you do.
I think it's interesting, this particular story, because despite it placed both the character of the vicar and the verger in completely different circumstances to that which they're used to, they still maintain that solid relationship that you see throughout the entire run of Dad's Army, just in a completely different context.
Yes, but I mean, also, there's still the irritation that I have with the verger. It'll be quiet, Mr. Yateman, and all that thing. I mean, especially at the end, where I say, here's your cap and here's your... what about the silly trousers?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I've often thought of the three main additional characters, the vicar, the verger, and the warden. The vicar is the most standalone and the most able to carry off a role on his own, whereas the verger always had to be with the vicar to have that camaraderie.
I agree entirely. I think the vicar should have had his own series. You know, your performance, Frank, I mean, you made the vicar real. When you're not doing anything, you're still acting. To go on a totally different episode here, in The Honourable Man, when you're all sat around the table, you're always acting. You know, the vicar lives even when he's not saying anything. I think it's
I think most actors do that. I mean, I hope, I think they do, yes.
Yeah.
I think one of the important lessons one learns as a young actor is that you never stop. And the great thing is not just the lines you say, but listening to what other people are saying. Hmm. And I think that's extremely important. So therefore you're in the situation and you're reacting as the character would react, one hopes.
It's funny you mention how you listen as well, because one of the things I've noticed about this episode, and I'm not sure if it's unique, but the vicar has one-to-one scenes with Mannering, with Wilson, and with Jones at separate points throughout the episode. And I'd never noticed that before until I'd watched it in preparation for this discussion.
Oh, well, I suspect I did. I think there must have been other episodes where I had one-to-one discussions with, one-to-one scenes with people.
I'm sure there were, but it was just noticeable how you worked through the cast almost having separate conversations.
Well, could it be, because I think I'm right in saying that after this episode, for the remainder of the series, I think there were only two episodes that you weren't in. I mean, you featured a lot more heavily after this episode. Could it have been the success of bring you and Teddy into a more important role made Jimmy and David think, well, let's put them in a lot more regularly?
I don't know. I mean, it would be nice to think that. I mean, by the last series, I was in every episode.
Mm. I think it's quite clear that the Vicar does go on a kind of journey all the way from these first episodes in Series 3 all the way through to the very last episodes in the run, and your involvement grows as the run goes on as well. And there must be a reason for that, and that's because the Vicar was an incredibly popular character.
Well, I mean, in the very first episode I did, The Armoured Might of Corporal Jones, I think I only had two lines, didn't I? But then, as you say, and also, as the series progresses, you've run the changes on perhaps the main characters quite a lot. You suddenly start looking to the unholy three, you know, the unholy trinity of the Vicar, the Verger and the Warden, and think, well, what can we get out of them and bring them in?
I mean, do you remember feeling any difference when you realised the Vicar was going to be the central premise, really, of this episode?
I don't remember feeling it. I don't remember anything, really. I'm getting very old, you know. I don't really remember these things. But as
the run continued and you started getting more lines, you became more important to the plots of each story, were you particularly conscious that this isn't just going to be a one or two episode appearance? You're going to become, potentially, the most regular, non-regular member of the cast?
Well, the most regular, non-regular was actually Bill, because as the Warden he was in far more
of
episodes.
Course.
And actually I think Teddy was probably in more episodes than I was, so... I think he was.
I think he edged you by a couple of episodes. And also, Teddy appeared... Well, he wasn't named as Mr. Yateman, but I think it was in the second series, one of the black and white ones.
He
appears as a cleaner. Presumably gave him the first idea of, oh, this could be quite fun with Mr. Yateman.
Yeah, well, I think Teddy came into it long before I did, because I came in the first episode of Series 3, I think, didn't I?
That's right.
So they did a whole two series without me altogether.
Although well, you're mentioned, yes.
The Vicar was mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned about you playing a very good pantomime dame.
Oh, really?
Before they even cast you, yeah.
there was lots of references to the Vicar, so it was perfectly natural for the viewer to expect to see the Vicar at some point.
And it must have been quite exciting, I'm sure, because, I mean, it very quickly built up quite a solid fan base, and the viewing figures got really high very, very quickly. I'm sure it must have been exciting if you're watching that very first episode of Series 3 in colour, and then you get to see this Vicar everyone has heard about. And then they thought, well, even better, it's Frank Williams, you know.
Well, I've heard about that, but I mean, but of course, that was really quite a special episode in many ways, because I think, I'm talking about The Armoured Might of Corporal Jones now. I mean, I think, am I right, it was the first one in which they used the van.
Quite
right. It was the first episode that Pamela Candel did.
Yes.
The first episode that I did. And then right at the end, you get a little cameo from Nigel Hawthorne, of all people.
Absolutely.
It's a marvellous episode, that one.
Oh, that's actually the episode we're reviewing next time.
Hey, okay.
Paul Carpenter, who I know you know from the Appreciation Society, has already recorded a review of that particular episode.
Oh, right. Well, there we go.
So I can talk about that one with you without any trouble. Yeah. I've heard his recording already.
Yeah.
But trying to get back to the recruit then, there was, again, some more screen time for both yourself and the Verger when you are left on guard. The rest of the platoon abandon a pair of you.
Yeah, well, that's typical, isn't it? I mean, you get the Vicar there, Paul, and they're all going in and leave these two new recruits outside having to cope with it all.
No, absolutely.
And you sing a hymn. Can you remember which hymn you sing?
I can't remember what hymn I
sing. Oft in danger, oft in woe, Christian soldiers onward.
The Reverend! Oh. Somebody is making an approach.
Well, you just heard it, and now I still don't know what it is.
Onward Christian Soldiers, I think.
But was it Onward Christian Soldiers?
It was Onward Christian Soldiers, let's say.
Oh, right, yes, okay. The interesting thing is that when we're on the guard duty, the cheeky boy comes, and I gather from Richard Webber, who wrote the A to Z of Dad's Army, that the cheeky boy was the only person he could not find any thing about, and so... nobody sort of quite knows where the cheeky boy is now? Or?
Well, the actor was someone called Lindsay Dunn.
Yeah, I looked up Lindsay Dunn, and according to the internet, it's the only thing he ever did. I, at first, questioned, was he a relation to Clive Dunn, but apparently not. Oh,
no, I don't think so, no.
And so, yeah, it's a shame, because it's a lovely performance, really cheeky.
Oh, it's a marvellous performance.
And, you know, it must have been very... because it was more or less filmed live, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it was recorded. I mean, you know, if anything went terribly wrong, we could do it again. But you see, when you're that age, you are much more on the ball, really, than when you get older.
Yeah. Do you remember much at all about Lindsay at all when you were acting? Because you exchanged a few lines, didn't you?
Oh, we had quite a lot of lines together, yes. Not a great deal about him, no. I mean, he was a nice young kid, as far as I remember, and I thought he was excellent in it.
Yeah.
But as I say, Richard Webber, I think, said that of all the people, had he traced everybody, except this young boy.
Wow.
Well, if you are listening to the podcast, Lindsay, please do contact Jenny.
James at dadsarmypodcast.com.
Yeah.
It would be great to interview you.
And then I'll make a documentary about you.
He does a good documentary, that Ollie Crocker, I have to tell you.
It was those scenes I picked for something for the weekend to show, because I think they're really lovely, spooky scenes. I mean, the good thing about Dad's Army, I think, is the fact that Jonesy and everyone, they are heroes. Even though they get things wrong, they're heroes. And as soon as Jonesy thinks that the vicar's in trouble, come on, boys, the vicar's in trouble! And I love that bit. He gets so excitable. And John Laurie just says, you didn't drag us out of here for him! And it's a really funny scene. And is it they mention about Sainsbury's, that he walked into Jonesy's...
Oh, yes.
And yells, he comes in and yells, Sainsbury's. Yes. I mean, Jimmy and David really were on the ball with the writer. I mean, were you ever surprised? I mean, I don't think many writers could claim to have done 9 series of a show and still get great gags all the way through.
I mean, they were a marvellous combination, David and Jimmy. There were occasions when we would, among the cast, if something came up, would just try to decide which one of them had written this particular bit. And I can remember Arthur, when he was particularly fed up with some piece of business, I think it was the one where they had to move feathers from one place to another.
Oh, yes.
Is that the Battle of the Jug?
It is, yeah.
And Arthur said, I bet this was one of Jimmy's ideas. And it wasn't actually, it was David. So there we are.
So at the time, you weren't aware at all of which of the two had written the scripts?
No, I mean, one got a script, and it was... and, I mean, all the other scripts I've done in the past, I did some comedy playhouses by Galton and Simpson, I think, and I don't think one ever sat down and thought, which one is Galton, which one is Simpson?
It's only perhaps with hindsight that advocates of the show, like ourselves or fans of the show, think, oh, that would be really interesting to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they claim that they can't remember who wrote what
episode. I'm absolutely sure that's right. I mean, I think, I don't know quite how they worked, but whatever they did, I mean, once it got to the studio, I suspect they had both forgotten about which one wrote what, and they were just making sure that what they had written together worked. And 30 years on,
of course
they don't remember.
Of course. I think there must be handwritten scripts somewhere. Whether or not they still exist or not, I'm not certain, so perhaps they could discern who wrote which from the handwriting. That's my only Miss Marple.
I'd love to know whether... you know, as with some of the Doctor Who's, they've recently discovered Claws of Axos as an example, the original studio recording with about 10 minutes of deleted scenes. Mm. Wouldn't it be amazing if there were some of the... Because I've got a book, the complete Dad's Army scripts, which... Because, I mean, you can notice every now and then where a cut has been made, presumably for timing. Wouldn't it be amazing if there were some long-lost Dad's Army gags hidden in the BBC vault somewhere? I mean, that could be really interesting to see. A good example of where I thought that had happened to you, Frank, was in the Lady Godiva episode, where I think you actually, you're sat in this committee judging the Lady Godivas, and you only get one line. And of course, I read the script, and you had a lot more, but presumably just the timing may cut out a bit of banter between you and the Verger.
I might have done it very badly, they decided to get rid of that.
I can't imagine that at all.
They did actually rediscover some footage for Battle of the Giants, and that's been inserted onto the DVD release now.
Oh, wow.
It's not much of it, and I think it features some sheep. If my memory is correct.
Oh, that's wonderful. This legend will be running around. Oh, wow.
So there's, and that's the only episode that we have with a commentary from any of the stars and cast and crew, because David and Jimmy provided a commentary for that particular episode as well. But
sheep? What's sheep got to do with anything?
I think there was an incredible amount of location shooting in Bethel.
Oh, right,
the Giants, and one of the scenes... I think it is still in the transmitted version as well. They get delayed on a road because are some sheep, and I think it was an extended version of that scene.
How extraordinary, because that's the first time I've heard that, and what a shame that we didn't, you know, that presumably, I think, is worth putting on the cover, you know, a newly extended version of a classic episode.
I mean, see more sheep in this particular episode.
I don't think Frank agrees with that. You can have a picture of the sheep on the cover.
Yeah.
I think we're probably moving away a little. Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because the platoon, whilst the Vicar and the Verger are out challenging small boys, they actually have a conversation inside of the hut about the price of food and cigarettes and so on, and that actually kind of date stamps the episode a little bit, and it makes it more integral to the wartime setting. And I mean, I don't know whether the sums of money they talk about are extravagant by comparison to prices in those times or not, but it's a nice little scene.
Well, you look at that. 2 shillings for a packet of 20 cigarettes. Highway robbery.
I know the world's gone mad. I remember when I was a young man, some of us young braves decided we'd have a really good night out. And so we went to London and saw the show at the Gaiety Theatre. Then we had a really good slap-up supper, 4 courses, with wine. Then we all sailed home in hansom cabs. And you know, we still had some change left out of half a sovereign.
You know, the trouble with you, Godfrey, you've always been a spendthrift.
Well, I don't think prices are too bad. Young Pike and I went to the Rosemary Cafe in Eastgate the other day for lunch, didn't we? You know what we had? We had brown Windsor soup, we had well meat cutlets, we had mashed potatoes, swedes, tapioca pudding and a cup of tea. 9p. Mind you, it wasn't very good.
Well, I'm absolutely sure if they talk about the price of food at that time, it will be correct, because Jimmy, above all other people, is absolute stickler for getting things right. Mm. So, I mean, he would have researched that like... Well, and David, I suspect, would both have researched like that to make absolutely sure that they got the prices right. Mm.
No, I'm sure too. There's minute detail about the war that are almost included in throwaway lines sometimes. And if you check them out, they are absolutely 100% spot-on accurate.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a great testament to Dad's Army. I mean, you when you consider it was made, you know, 30-plus years after the war, you never, ever see... there's never any giveaways on all the location filming. It's all true to the period. What was the location filming like? Was it a sort of very controlled atmosphere, or were you guys really pressured for time quite often?
I think we were obviously pressured for time because, I mean, you had to get a certain amount in. But one didn't feel ever that one was under pressure. I mean, it just flowed along. It had been well organised, well timed, and you got through it. I don't remember any kind of panic. Oh, come on, chaps, we've got to get this scene. And I don't remember any of that. It was all just perfectly sort of calm and... we did the scenes we were meant to do. And, of course, where we did the location filming, on the battle area in near Thetford, there was nothing modern there to distract. When we went into the town of Thetford, I mean, they chose places which had not particularly changed, stuck some tape on the windows, as they had in the wartime. I mean, it looked totally authentic.
Mm. No, I mean, it is absolutely true, and it got the period spot on. Mm. So it was superb. Considering that you've recently seen The Recruit, Frank, I mean, how do you feel it stands up today compared to contemporary television?
Oh, well, don't talk to me about contemporary television, because I think there are so few comedy programmes which are good family viewing in the way that Dad's Army is. And I mean, the extraordinary thing about Dad's Army is now that we have a whole host of fans who weren't even born when we did it. And we've got the grandchildren of and the great-grandchildren of people who saw it the first time round. And when we have one of our days, I mean, this is what you get. You get a family coming, and you get Grandma, her son, and their her grandson all coming and saying they're great fans of Dad's Army. So, yeah, it's amazing.
No, it is. And I think certainly now with the return of the stage play next year, where they've announced the episodes they're doing now, and the vicar does feature. So the vicar's going to be recast after 40 years.
Oh, really? Yes. Well,
oh, wow.
I've seen amateur productions where the vicar has appeared, and sometimes they look quite like me, poor souls.
They don't sound like you, Frank.
Would you do it, Frank? Would you get involved?
I think I'd be a bit old now, even for a wartime vicar.
No, this is...
I don't think I'd want to go traipsing around the country in a stage show now. I'd love to do a telly, but not. I don't think I really want to do any more stage.
The only person who's been confirmed to come back in the second leg of the tour is Leslie Grantham as Walker.
Oh, he's doing it again? Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah, he's doing it again. So, and he was very, very good.
I'm sure he would be. Yes, absolutely. The thing about Jimmy Beck was he had such enormous charm, and you really, for the part of Walker, have to have charm. And Geoffrey Holland, who played it on the tour of our stage show of it, I mean, he also has enormous charm, and it was great. And of course, we did the tour of the stage show. We went up and down the country, and we did it in the hot summer of 76, and it was wonderful. I mean, we had the most marvellous time. It really was.
Wonderful. I have to admit, I've heard lots of stories about that time, and I've seen your videos as well that you made on the DVDs.
Oh, yeah. Martha saying, oh, you bought a cine camera. Well, I hope you've got something very simple, Frank, for you. Obviously, a lot of confidence in my ability.
Well, it's great listening to the commentary that you recorded long after the pictures were taken.
Oh, yes, long after, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so dragging us back to The Recruit then, we're almost at the final scene, and I thought it just worth noting that despite the pandemonium almost that's kind of ensued with the entire platoon trying to take on Hodges in a fight, and the vicar storming off in a huff, that it's all grounded in an air raid, and all of a sudden everyone clicks back into what their role is, their wartime role is, and we're brought back into the realities of war, and it finishes here.
There were moments that when it went into the truth of war, and I think that was one of the great strengths of the whole series. I mean, that it was rooted. And I think Ollie said earlier, they were heroes, these people. They, although they were buffoons on some level, they also were heroes. And I mean, I love those episodes where Mannering, in spite of his pompousness, actually does behave in a rather heroic way.
Such as this one, because I believe Wilson's apologising for something. He said, oh, never mind, all that, there's a war on, and he you know, goes faster with his crutches than he would in normality. I think that's what... You're absolutely right, James. There's a real British spirit to Dad's Army, which I think we'd all like to think, in a nice sort of way, would be still around in you know, in circumstances today. But if everyone perhaps behaved a bit like the Home Guard of Warrington on Sea, the world could be a perhaps better place. You know?
It could be argued that the Labour government are doing just that, but this isn't a political podcast.
Recruit is a very, very good episode. I mean, it's a great one for Frank and for Teddy Sinclair. And Bill Pertwee comes in towards the end and gives it a bit of energy, and everyone gangs up on him, and it's That's the thing with the Dad's Army group, is that they're all a team, a very solid team. And I think as a public, we like to see a nice solid team.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a team, but normally, and I mean, I think this is the interesting thing about this particular episode, the team is actually infiltrated by two of the enemy, as it were, because normally Bill, Teddy and myself are again Mannering, and suddenly Mannering finds he's got us in the ranks, and that's a nice twist to it. Mm. And it was the last episode of that particular series, so obviously by the time they started the next series, the vicar was back at his proper place and no longer infiltrating the true heroes, as it were.
The last thing I wanted to ask you, Frank, before we draw this discussion to a close, is did you enjoy watching it this time when you rewatched the episode?
Oh, I always enjoy watching an episode of Dad's Army, and I mean, I enjoyed watching this one. But I don't particularly enjoy watching myself, but I just so admire the timing that goes on between Arthur, John and Clive particularly, which is three marvellous actors, of course, but it is also great tribute to David in doing the way he's edited it, because the timing on television is not just down to actors, it's also down to the person who's doing the editing. Mm, and I think any episode I watch, I just love those scenes where Arthur and John and Clive are having a sort of, and of course the other characters as well, but particularly those three. And Arthur and John together, I just think, are total joy.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree more. And I think the relationship between those two characters actually defines most of Dad's Army.
Yes.
It's the class differential.
Yes. I mean, I going right back to the beginning of that episode, I mean, all that stuff with Wilson saying, may I say how lovely, that's, and that little belt around your, and Wilson, you know, she's got to nurse the sick, she's got to have all this Jack Buchanan nonsense, or Ronald Cover nonsense, or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's a wonderful sort of thing between them.
No, I couldn't agree more. Frank, thank you very much again for spending the time talking to us about your time on Dad's Army. It's a joy, as always, to listen to your old memories.
It's an enormous pleasure. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Oliver, for joining me once again.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, James.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with your host, James.
Now, as I'm sure many of you will know, Perry and Croft Day 2009 took place in May this year at Brussingham Steam Museum. Dad's Army Appreciation Society members have the opportunity to attend a member's meal. Now, it's not a guaranteed ticket, even for a fully paid-up member. Because it's such a popular event, you have to put your name forward, and a lottery takes place, and sometimes you may be lucky and actually get a ticket to this event. Others, unfortunately, are disappointed. Now, I was there this year, and I was recording the speeches made, slightly different format to 2008's event this time round, whereby the stars, the cast, the crew, the writers were all introduced. They came in at the beginning of the event, they had their dinner, and after the meal took place, they had the opportunity to make a speech or say a few words. Now in 2008, some of the speeches went on for about 8 or 9 minutes, and some of the stories and anecdotes were absolutely fantastic. Now, for one reason or another, probably because we changed venue for this year and the whole room was much larger, and there seems to be far more people there too, the speeches seemed to be shorter and they weren't as in-depth as the previous year. So I did record them and I will play them to you in a second, but Bill Pertwee's speech was of particular note this time round. He's very, very cheeky, as always, and as he says, at his age, he's perfectly allowed to be cheeky. He can say and do exactly what he wants, and I think he enjoys doing just that. But hopefully you'll enjoy the recordings that I made. Take a listen, and if it's inspired you to try and attend the 2010 members' meal, then you first need to join the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, which is a very, very small membership fee. For that, you get a quarterly newsletter and the opportunity to attend many, many events, in addition to being kept up to date on all of the latest Dad's Army news. It's a very, very sound investment for any Dad's Army fan, and of course, one of of the things you can do is put your name forward to make certain that you can actually be in with a chance of attending next year. I would recommend to every Dad's Army fan that they do this at least once, because it's not going to go on forever, and the events that they put on are really, really top-notch. Anyway, here are the recordings that I made at the Members' Mill.
One of our greatest stars, it's Mr. Frank Williams, who'll give us a little chat now.
Well, it's wonderful to be here, wonderful to see all of you here. Ronnie and I went round the some of the locations in the battle area today, and I must say it brought back a lot of memories to me. Every time we came across a bit of water, I remembered that that's what Bill Pertwee fell into. And then Tony Pritchard said to me, you had a scene in episode here where you actually ran across from there to there. And I thought, ran? But I obviously did in those days. I could still run. And I remember dear Arnold Ridley saying when we were doing the last series, you know, when we started this programme, I did a lot of running about, but I can't do that anymore, and I'm beginning to know the feeling. Anyway, lovely to see you all here. Lovely to be here. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Right, well, Tony's finding our next guest. I'll give you a bit of an introduction to him. There's an acting maxim, always build your part. And if one person has built his part in Dad's Army, it's got to be this man. It's absolutely wonderful. He speaks about 106 languages anyway. He did do just one episode, and he was one of the greatest characters ever in Dad's Army. Of course, it's a U-boat captain, Mr. Philip Maddock.
Hello. That's what took me completely by surprise. And then I thought, well, there was only one U-boat commander that I remember vaguely. And it's quite an achievement, actually, when you think that they did, I think, 81, and this was one. And I remember at the time thinking, not knowing a lot about it in those days, that it was an unusual experience down here in Thetford. And it was this extraordinary assembly of actors together, and so completely different. I thought that was very clever casting. I did think of that at the time. I just thought, this is an interesting group of people, and I enjoyed it enormously, and hadn't the foggiest idea that all these years later, and at the times we've had dinners, and I remember one up in Liverpool not long ago, there was a boy here sitting next to me on the table. He was 8, and there was the man here was 80-year-old, and both of them knew all my lines perfectly. And that is something impressive, and it says something about the writers as well. But it was an unforgettable experience in that way. And recently, I was stopped yesterday in Farringdon by somebody in the station, one of the employees there, and he says, "You're an actor, aren't you? You're an actor." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, yeah, what you done?" I said, "Well, a number of things." He said, "Yeah, well, of course, what have you done, sort of, you know, right now?" I said, "The one that's being talked about at the moment is Dad's Army." "That's it," he said. "Yeah, that's it. Philip Maddock, you know, yes." He said, "Oh, that's great." So I've got a feeling if I ever have a gravestone, it'll be something like that written on me. And I said, "You didn't see my King Lear 2 years ago, then." Actually, I did King Lear 2 years ago, but I had a feeling he hadn't seen it. And I was right, really. But it's lovely to be here. Lovely crowd, lovely place. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker, he really is the inventor of TV comedy, because there wasn't any rules when this guy did it. It was the birth of television, really, of modern television. And never has a sobriquet been more aptly named. It's Mr. Television himself, Mr. Harold Snow.
It's very difficult indeed to live up to an intro like that, but thank you very much. I think it's absolutely wonderful we're all here yet again, and it seems such a, well, it was a hell of a long time ago since we did this, but it's absolutely wonderful that we all get together every year and it keeps going and going and going. And you have to be honest, how many of the comedy programmes these days are they going to be holding 40 anniversaries of? Not many, I don't think. Anyway, it's a great day, have a lovely evening, and look forward to tomorrow as well.
Your assistant will be with you in a moment. Now, the next speaker, she's wonderful. Because, believe it or not, she married a man that was in the Sudan campaign. And they're still married, and they're both still alive. And, of course, it's, as I've said before, the femme fatale of Warmington, it's Pamela Kundell.
Good evening, my darlings. We are still married, me and Jonesy, although he lives in Portugal and I live in London. But maybe that's a good thing. Anyway, I think that the Dad's Army Appreciation Society has been absolutely wonderful. I think the gathering we have each year has been better and better. And I would like to thank all of you for coming tonight. And I hope you enjoy the meal as much as I'm going to enjoy it. And I love you all, my darlings. And may Mrs. Fox go on for a long, long time.
Now, our next person to speak was actually in Round and Round Went the Great Big Wheel. He was the radio operator. Of course, we know him much more for It Ain't Half Up, Mum. And he's exactly... He's one of those actors who is who he is. He doesn't really act, he's just himself. He had a beard last year, he hasn't got it this year, so he's in disguise. Of course, it's that Mr. John Clegg.
Hello. Hello, thank you very much indeed. This was only a very, very small part, and I was rang up by Jimmy, and he said that there's a part for you in Dad's Army, would you like to play it? And I said, yes, oh, fine. And I said, when the script came, I was terribly, terribly snooty about the whole thing. And I said, well, it's only a very small part, Jim. And he said, well, you're down for 2 days filming. We'll do it in 1 day, and you'll be paid for two. So I said, well, that's all right. And... when we were chatting at filming, Jimmy Beck came up and I was introduced to him, and Jimmy Beck said to Jimmy Perry, he said, I don't know, it's a lot of your friends, very nice. You never seem to have any girls, Jimmy. I mean, it'd be nice to have a few nice, pretty girls around, wouldn't it? I mean, it would cheer the whole filming up, wouldn't it? It'd be very pleasant. Why don't you? And Jimmy didn't smile or anything, he just looked very seriously and thought about it for a minute and said, well, they're not funny, are they?
Right then, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear from some of our other guests after dinner, called Knowles.
Is that on now? I think it is. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to be here. Now, as we all know, actors hate talking about themselves. But I think sometimes you've got to break the rules. So I'm going to mention one or two things. I started with Jimmy's help in his rep, of course. And he encouraged me to be sort of... He said, keep on doing the silly ass stuff, old boy. Then he introduced me to David, and David... luckily cast me in Dad's Army, and I did six episodes of that, and then we moved on to It Ain't Half Up, Mum, and then we moved on to You Rang Me, Lord. And when we came to You Rang Me, Lord, I said to Jimmy and David, I said, how do you want me to play this part? And he said, just exactly what you've been doing before, old boy. Just play the silly arse. And sometimes after, my daughters got, when they were about six or seven, they got so used to people hearing this me referred to as a silly arse, you know. Jimmy would say, what a silly arse you are. They were asked one day at school to write an essay on what daddy does for a living. And they both wrote, my daddy is an arse. They didn't want to put silly, but they were quite happy with arse. that's it, lady. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Right, are we all right now? Okay, the next guest, I always describe him as God, because he is the God of television, script writing, comedy, because he did a lot of stuff as well as Dad's Army. But you all know him, he's
the greatest, one of the two greatest script writers ever to grace a TV screen. Of course, it's Mr. David Croft.
Somebody mentioned earlier on that we lack beautiful girls. We have Mrs. Fox. How can we do without them?
Now, when he came in, I always say about this guy, William Shakespeare, because I believe in 100, 150 years, 200 years, even if they remember Shakespeare, they'll remember this guy, because he's absolutely, what he's done, he's always been 100% fabulous. Of course, it is the one and only Mr. Jimmy Perry.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time goes by, the years roll by, and David and I are still going strong, aren't we, David? Look well tonight. I never forget the first time I drove down to Thetford to shoot the first filming of Dad's Army. That's, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, 40 years ago. And I parked my little Beetle, and I got out of the car and I walked into the Bella Hotel, and the first person I saw was John Laurie running down the corridor. Now, in those days, the Bella Hotel had what they called a buttery. It served things like poached egg on toast and things like that. And the first thing John Laurie said to me was, "Did you see that? 5 shillings for 2 poached eggs on toast to grace." And the very first day of the filming, David in those days had a Rolls Royce. He always had a Rolls Royce. Always showing off terribly. And it was raining, ladies and gentlemen. This was our first bit of filming. And all the cast, entire cast of Dad's Army, were crammed in the back of David's Rolls Royce. And David said, "Go and get them. I want to do the first shot." So I opened the door of the Rolls and I said to Arthur Lowe & Co., "David's ready for you to do the next shot." And Arthur said, "We'll come when we're ready." And I said, "David, we've got a great show here, but they're a miserable lot of old sods." Anyhow, that's a long time ago, ladies and gentlemen. 40 years. And the amazing thing is, Thetford has sort of prospered off us. And Arthur Lowe is shortly, well, I hope it'll be shortly, because he deserves it, will have his statue in the square in Thetford. Next door to that great Englishman, Thomas Paine, the man who invented socialism. Now, this is a terrible punishment, because Arthur Lowe was a hard-nosed Tory. So he's got to spend an interminable amount of time next door to the great Sir Thomas Paine. Thank you for coming, everyone, and lovely to see you.
Okay, the next one is, he started it all, Rear Because of Him. And he says he's not an actor, but I reckon he's probably one of the best we've ever had comedy actors. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Purvey.
Thank you. If we had more of that noise, we'd have less of you. Which would be a godsend. Jimmy said just now that he told David they were a lot of miserable old sods, that filming that first episode. Actually, I heard it that the crew said that Jimmy Perry's a miserable old sod. And they were right, of course. Used to stand behind and say, "Oh, look, his shoelaces are not the right colour." All that crap went on. David didn't lose his temper at all. He just carried on filming, you know, which is quite right. and we were like a lot of schoolboys, I suppose. And David was very quiet, no shouting. But Jim would still go on and say, can we have a second shot of that? He's got the wrong shoelaces on, or bugger off, you know. Anyway, those were the days, and we had a great time, and obviously. And I must mention now, our connection with Thetford has come forward in leaps and bounds, because Corinne and two great friends of mine here, and a lot of volunteers, have made a wonderful job of the Thetford Dad's Army Museum. I mean, if you haven't seen it yet, for goodness sake, do so. People are coming from far and wide to see it now, which is marvellous, and they're having special tours around the, you know, by organised by the council, tours around Thetford itself. So do go along, because it's absolutely marvellous, and congratulations to you, really. Congratulations to you, Stuart and Sarah. And all those folks. And also, I think now is the time that I would like to say that I'm sure a lot of the attention that has been brought onto the BBC for perhaps even the reruns of Dad's Army, but certainly from the point of view of DVDs and whatever else has been done of the show, that the Preservation Society have had a tremendous amount to do with this, and they work very hard, and they keep in touch with their members. They produce this lovely magazine now, and I really have to congratulate them, and we all ought to be very thankful that we have such a marvellous society supporting Dad's Army as they do, you know. Most of us will be at Bressingham tomorrow, I suppose. Another boring day with all the fans. never mind. Yeah, well, yes, if your brain's really hard, then we won't have to do anything. But we should be there in the tents, you know. I think it's sort of 11:30 to... Well, whatever time we're leaving here is ridiculous time. I normally don't get up at home until 11, quarter past 11. Absolute nonsense. However, we should be there and until, I think, half past one, then we're having a proper break this time, not a cup of tea and a nasty biscuit, but we're having sort of half an hour up, and then we carry on after that again. So we shall see you all tomorrow, I'm sure, and it'll be a delight to see you again, as it is to everybody tonight. Thank you very much indeed for your support.
Announcement, however, I would like to make very quickly. The podcast now has a Twitter page, and I'll start by giving you the web address. It's www.twitter.com/Dad's Army Podcast. Now, those of you who are not familiar with Twitter, it's basically an online communication tool. It allows me to update what I'm doing with a podcast whenever I like, sometimes only once a day, sometimes once every 2 or 3 days, sometimes many times on one particular day. And it also allows me to update you with all of the breaking Dad's Army news. Now, I appreciate there's not a terrific amount of news all the time, but as and when it does break, you can read about it first and be as up to date as possible by just logging on to www.twitter.com/Dad's Army Podcast and clicking on Follow Me. You will need to sign up, but it takes about 2 minutes and it will keep you up to date with all things Dad's Army.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
That's about it for episode 35. It's a long episode this month. Hope you really enjoyed listening to all that we had to go through today. If you've got any feedback for me, as always, then please send me an email, james@dadsarmypodcast.com, and emails that we receive nearly always get read out in a future podcast. You can also follow me on Twitter, as I mentioned earlier. That's www.twitter.com/Dad's Army Podcast. That's all for now, and I look forward to speaking to you again in August. Take care, and bye for now.
blog is just a diary you post on the internet so everybody in the world can read along. It means you're under the impression that your every waking thought is a source of fascination, but you're wrong. Then there's MySpace, which is mainly full of dreadful indie bands who want a record deal, although it's a lost cause. Then there's Facebook, which is mainly a way to reassure yourself that your buddies' lives are just as dull as yours. A podcast is a radio show you make and post yourself, so it doesn't matter if it's really crap. MP3s are just a clever way of stealing people's songs, which is why the record industry's collapsed. Wikipedia is a site where you could have looked all this up for yourself if you weren't such a lazy git. And Twitter is for messages that last 140 characters or less, and I'm the king of it.
Of course, modern viewers will see Sainsbury's very differently from the way Sainsbury's was in the wartime. I mean, you now think Sainsbury's, you think a big supermarket. When I remember Sainsbury's as a boy during the war, I mean, it was a store which did all these things, but you went to each counter. You went to this counter, and they cut off slices of bacon for you, and they had a great pat of butter, an enormous pat of butter. They cut a bit off and weighed it until it came to half a pound of butter. Then you went along the counter and you talked to another assistant and got your biscuits or your eggs and whatever. And then, of course, by the time the war came, you had to not only go to this, but you also had to produce your ration book. And each counter would take the appropriate bit from your ration book to show you got your quota of butter or your quota of eggs or whatever.